Okay, so we're recording. Everyone has to consent to their organ donation to Zoom before we continue. It's in the small text when you agree to the recording. And we share screen. And let's pick up with our discussion of the Rama in Siman Yud Zayin. I should mention, though, just in the last, again, 30 seconds, I forgot to mention this makar in Bava Basra Kafu Amud Gimel Amud Beis, if anybody saw it. Just the Gemara criticizes these Dayanim that always split the case 50-50. Dayanei Dechatzatzta, the Gemara calls it. And Rashbam explains that they're Dayanei Pshara She'ein Bekiyim Bedin. Here it's clearly an insult, right? These Dayanim like don't know the din, so they just always split the amount between the parties. But look at what Rashbam says. And the interesting question is if whether the Rashbam is holding like the Reb Shimon Shkap idea, that these are Dayane Pshara because they treat everything like it's Mamana Mutal B'Safek Cholkin. So is he just saying that they have a similar legal result, or is the Rashbam Rishon who adumbrates this later theory that the Achronim pick up on? That yachloku is a type of pshara. Does everybody see that?
I thought it was being literal, like it's mamon mutal b'safek for these dayanim because they aren't sure about anything.
That's cute, but he doesn't say. He says kedin mamon hamutal b'safek, meaning they split it, you know, following the rule of mamon hamutal b'safek. So I'm wondering if that's his way of saying they're dayane pshara in that, you know, they apply this rule of cholkin. And so it seems to be identifying the Pshara theory with the Mamana Mutal B'Safek Cholkin theory, which is consistent with what we saw in Abzal Menachem Goldberg and at the B'Shem and Shkap's Ha'ara. Okay, so now for our topic for today. That is the Diyan and the Shita of the Rama in Siman Yud Zayin, both in the Darkei Moshe and in the Hasagos of Shulchan Aruch. So you all know the Darkei Moshe is the same Reb Moshe as Reb Moshe Israelis in the Shulchan Aruch. Does everybody know that? There's a lot of overlap between the Pirushim on the Tur and the Pirushim on the Shulchan Aruch. So the Rama wrote the Darkei Moshe on the Tur and the Asagos the Rama on the Shulchan Aruch, same person. The Sma wrote a Pirush on the Shulchan Aruch, which we'll see, right? And what did he write on the Tur? Anybody know what the Sma's Pirush on the Tur is? He's got two of them.
Drisha or Prisha?
Yeah, exactly. The Drisha and the Prisha on the Tur are written by the author of the Sma. And I guess this next one is not a great example, but the Bach is the father-in-law of the Taz. Right? So the Bach wrote on the Tur and the Taz wrote on Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so let's look at the Rama's Psak. The Rama writes in Siman Yud Zayin, based off Runya's case, based off our case in Bava Basra, that what rule does he derive from here? Anybody want to just tell us, take us through this quick Psak of the Rama? Is anybody, any volunteers to take us through this? Ned, is that a hand? Take us through it, Ned.
Want me to read it or just summarize it?
Summarize it.
Okay. So he learns out from Runya that a Dayan cannot issue a verdict that is greater than the claim of the prosecution, whatever. Yeah.
Of the plaintiff. That's right.
The plaintiff,
Of the Tovea. The Dayan should not issue an award beyond or above what the Tovea claims. And he tries to infer that from Runya's case. Near a little mod mizud, im baldin tava chaver ba'davar muat, ra hadayin shechayev lo yosar al pi hadin, she'ein tsarech lifsuk lo rak fi masha tovo. So there, that formulation is pretty positive. But then he says, if you paskin more than that, it's a toas in the dinus choser. And he nods to the rivash and simin reish chaf zayin. Okay, and we have that, that's in the Darkei Moshe. And we saw in the Rama, he says something similar. Baldin shetava chaver ba davar muat, ba'dayin broa sheyischayev lo al pi hadin yoser mima shetava, ein lo ledayin lifsok yoser mima shetava, v'im pasak lo yoser havetoos bedin v'chozer. And the parentheses say, this is the Rama's own chiddush from Bava Basra Daf Hei, and it also comes out of the Rivash in Reish Chav Zayin. Okay, everybody with me? Now, it's a little puzzling, right? And this is what the Mefarshim struggle with, is like, what's the rationale for this type of legal rule? Why in the world should this be the case, right? Isn't it a very strange type of ruling? So if we want to speculate here, how would we speculate to explain this? Let's just throw out a few theories. Ned, you want to offer one?
Yeah, we don't want to maximize machloket. We want to minimize machloket. So if they're happy with this, then this works.
I love it. Great. And what principle is that conciliatory with?
I don't know, the Pshara Shalom type stuff.
Yeah, I think that's very consistent with the Pshara type idea, meaning if you have an easy way to resolve the dispute in a way that makes everybody happy, so do that, right? So if the claimant is, if the Toveya is asking for less than he's entitled to, why should the Bezdin create more problems by giving him a bigger reward? Correct? So you can actually see this halacha in Siman Yud Zayin in Choshen Mishpat as actually flowing from the principles of Siman Yud Beis, which is Hilchos Pshara. So Ned, I think that's like a very good way of characterizing it. Exactly. Everybody agree with Ned as a possibility at least? Yeah, I think that's one. So then this principle and Pshara are almost like bedfellows, right? They're closely related. Schara, you have a different theory?
Yeah, there's this problem of, which kind of you put portrait of the Yanim being like Orche Dayanim, of like kind of arranging the case, of stepping in too much for the either the Tovei or the Nitba. And the Dayan supposed to be kind of impartial adjudicator, not advocating for either side. And this is kind of coming too close to advocacy.
Yeah. So the value of the Dayan, like let's call this even like judicial restraint or something, right? Or judicial passivity. You know, the Dayan shouldn't be getting over involved in the case. And so that value requires that he not seek more than the litigant himself seeks. Zacharia, it might be that your point about this judicial restraint actually reduces to Ned's point. Why is judicial restraint the value? Because why should the courts be trying to create greater fights or greater disagreement than the parties themselves have? But I could also see Zacharia's point standing on its own legs, right? It's a value in and of itself that the Dayanim be like impartial arbitrators and not be too active in the process. Okay, yeah, great point. Benji?
Yeah, I don't know if this is too similar to Zacharia, but I was going to say that like just the same way that if someone is suing someone else in Beit Din, if A is suing B, the Dayanim can't say, oh, it's actually B doesn't owe A $10,000. Actually C, someone that's totally not in Beit Din, owes him the $10,000. So the same way, like they have to just adjudicate with what's in front of them and they can't bring in a third person and say that they're chayiv. So too that if you sue for $10,000, you can't say, well, actually the money that wasn't even mentioned in court, he owes them.
Yeah, that's a good point. I would say that's close to, very close to what Zacharia is saying, a different way of explicating it. But I think in principle, that's very much in the same spirit, right? The same type of theory of judicial restraint, right? They shouldn't be poking their noses beyond what they're what's in front of them. Yeah, great point. Is there a third general mahalach that could be explained here, Josh?
Yeah, everyone seems to say it's mechila, and like I think some formulations are even that it would be like gazelle if they gave more after a mechila.
Yeah, I think the mechila point is very good, right? So mechila, notice, so Josh is saying a third way to go here is that this is about mechila. Maybe the Toveya is deemed to have been mochel the higher amount, correct, Josh? How does Josh's approach differ from the first two approaches? So it's less about, you know, the theory of Bezdin and Bezdin adjudication and the role of the judiciary. And it's literally about what rights the litigant has waived, or like a private mechila almost. Does everybody see that? So it's almost a Hilchos Kinyan halacha rather than Hilchos Dayanim, Hilchos Shoftim type of halacha, if you go Josh's way. Does everybody see that? Good. So there's a way to view this as mechila. If you go with mechila, it's a different type of halacha at work in this case. Are we in agreement? Yeah. I mean, the chiddush for mechila is going to be that normally mechila requires some sort of action. And here we're reading a lot into just his failure to ask for more. But good. This is what we're going to see in the ketzos. And the ketzos is going to try to make this work mitam mechila. Excellent. Okay. So let's look at what the mefarshim actually say. So the Rama pointed to the Rivash in Siman Reish Chaf Zayin. Oh, let me just say one more thing. Josh mentioned Mechila. It's a very difficult and worthwhile inquiry, maybe somebody wants to pursue this for the sheer paper for the semester. You know, we already saw Rashi in Bav Metzia and Hamafged, where he said that Pshara is somehow related to Mechila, because Yisomim are La B'nei Mechila Ninhu, that's why you can't do Pshara for them. So, you know, it's worthwhile trying to figure out the role that Mechila plays in Pshara itself, right? In which case, you know, Ned's interpretation of Simon Yud Zayin, grounding it in Pshara-type principles, and Josh's explanation of Simon Yud Zayin grounding it in Mechila-type principles may not be so far away in the end of the day, right? So it's something, more of a meta issue to think about what role Mechila plays throughout all these cases, all these principles. Okay, so Simon Reish Chav Zayin, we have the Tshuva, the Rivash. What's going on in Reish Chav Zayin? This is the Rama cites this as a basis for his psak. We have a lawsuit between a tenant and a landlord. Now, it appears that the we don't need all the background of the case. It's the salient facts for our analysis is that you have two people who are shutfin in a house, correct? One of them owns a third of the house and the other owns two thirds of the house. The person who owns one third leased the two third, the part owned by the two third owner as well. So he's living in the entire house, but one third as an owner and two thirds as a tenant. Is that right? Are that salient facts of the case? Now the owner of the two thirds portion wants to evict the tenant from his two thirds portion. He wants to take back, the landlord wants to take back possession of his share. And there's a dispute about whether now they have to dissolve the house, they have to liquefy it, sell it on the market and split the value. Or could they be compelled in some way to rotate in using the house, or be compelled to pay for one party to buy out the other party's rent usage? That's the terms of the dispute in the Tshuva. That sound more or less familiar? Yeah? Great. So you can imagine you and your roommate get into a fight. So let's take Kobe and Benji are in a fight. Let's pretend. And let's say Benji's suing Kobe. So there are a few different arrangements that could be worked out. Either Benji could, they could alternate weeks of using the dorm. That's one possibility. Or Benji offers Kobe the right to stay there, but pay rent to Ben for Benji's half. Or Benji says to Kobe, "Kobe, you leave and I'll pay you rent for your half." So right, three possibilities are suggested by Benji when he files suit. Three remedies. Does that make sense to you guys? Yes. If anybody has trouble with this, say it doesn't make sense to you. Okay, great. Makes sense to everyone. Josh Hurt, this is good? Yes? Okay, good. So, the Toveya offered three drachim. Ruvein Toveya lefnei adayanim sheyivar lo hakone achas mishalosh drachim. Either that Ruvein will buy out, so Benji will buy out Kobe's, will rent out Kobe's use right, or that Kobe will have to pay Reuven rent to use Reuven's share, or that they alternate. Osha yader bebatim Reuven shtei shanim v'chaver shana apiha gorel mi mehem yader tchila. Okay, that's the three options that Benji offers when he sues. Now the dayanim here appear to have been lazy, at least in the report. Hadayanim lo hishgichu yafe b'tvias Reuven. I guess the dayanim weren't paying close enough attention to the claims. And what did they do in their psak? Anybody remember, Zecharia?
They only gave the nitva the two renting options. They didn't give him the alternate years option.
Exactly. So the Dayan and Paskin, they only gave Kobe the renting option. Is this large enough, by the way? I can make this a little bigger. They only gave Kobe the renting option. They didn't give him the alternating weeks option. Right. So in effect, they ended up granting more than the Toveya sued for. That's the Ned, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, meaning, yeah, they exerted some sort of influence on the psak, but at the end of the day, this is still within the ratzon of the tovea. It's a legitimate option.
But I guess the tovea gave the defendant three possible avenues of recourse. The tovea gave the nitzba three possible avenues of recourse, and the dayanim only gave him two. So in effect, right, the dayanim were being harsher on the nitzba than they had to be.
But the principle is that
they're being harsher on the nitzba than the tovea thought. If you think about it from that perspective, I mean, the tovea said, "I'm happy with option 1, 2, or 3," and the dayanim said, "Nitzba, do 2 or 3, right, or just 1 and 2." They clipped off one option.
Well, who said it's about the threshold? It could just be about the ratzon, and if it's within the ratzon, then it should be fine. Even if you're limiting it, it's still a legitimate expression of his ratzon.
Right. So you're saying maybe this is fundamentally different than the amount of the award case.
Right.
Yeah, it's a very fair point. But the Ramak clearly is willing to make that leap from the Rivash's case to his case. This is, by the way, why it's so important to always look up these chuvos inside, right? If you just read the Ramah, you'd think, oh yeah, like the Rivash says the exact same thing the Ramah said, right? But then as you look at it, you see these subtle differences. So let's see what happens in the chuva here. So the Rivash writes, maybe there are grounds to be so ser their din. It's Roy Lister Dina Mipneshalo Inu Bitvias Ruvain, Vinas Nulo Yosirimasha Tava. So there are grounds to overturn the decision because Dayanim issued more than Ruvain or Benji was Toveya. Because he gave Shimon three options, and Dayanim only gave him two. Okay. Kivan Shehu Viter Le Shimon Bifne Bezdin Vinasano Habakhira. It would have been appropriate for the dayanim to pask in the din in accordance with the tvia, not more than the tvia. Okay, that's the analysis of the Rivash, and he seems to say that's a basis for overturning the psak. Okay, that's what you get from the Rishonim. The Rama adopts this, and then you get a whole discussion in the Achronim trying to figure out if the Rama's anchoring of the Rivash's tshuva in our sugya of Basra Hayamid Aleph makes sense. Okay. So what is the main question that all the Nosei Kalim here ask in trying to understand the Rama's analysis? What are they bothered by? So I would say, yeah. So anybody want to pipe in here? Benji, you want to help us? What are they... Or Dov, you asked this last time, right? And I think you raised this question.
Yeah, sorry, I lost this for a second.
So what are all the Mefarshim and the Shulchan Aruch bothered by in the Ramah's Pesach?
The Inun Malach is just very hard to fit in. They all have these very different, often kind of difficult, strange ideas about how this can work within the Ramah's thing.
So what crucial factual question has to be determined in the sugya? What's everybody trying to figure out factually?
What does Ravina know, roughly?
Yes, exactly. What does Ravina know, right? Did Ravina know that Rava originally sued for Kefi Masha Gadar, and then Rava intentionally lowered his claim to Agar Netira? Or... did Rava think that Ravina was Toa Bedin? Meaning, did Rava only hear the claim for Agar Netira, right? In which case Rava thought that Ravina didn't know the true psak, correct? That's the crucial factual question. What did Rava know? So what does the Bach and the Sma hold? What do they think? What facts do they think are true of the case, Dov?
They seem to think that he wasn't sure who the halacha was like, and therefore it's possible it would have been possible that he actually thought that halacha was only an agar netira, and Rava sort of ended up going with, basically.
Right, meaning that Rava thought Ravina was Toa Bedin. correct?
Yeah.
Exactly. So the Bachir writes, we have to say that Ravina, when he sued Runya before Rava, lo shal mimenu ela bistam, sheyitin lo agar netira. So Rava, so Ravina just sued for agar netira. And what do we see from there? Kasolka daite de Rava, shalo hayodea Ravina, dehuchsek Ravuna. So the Dayan, Rava, thought that Ravina didn't know the rule. And nevertheless, how did he paskin? Dov?
Like, I think, the smallest opinion.
Exactly. He paskin the agar netira amount, right? Zil pais de made fayis. So what does that show? Bal karchach de ein lo ledayin lifsuk yosemri masha tava. Right, that proves that even though Rava the Dayan knew that the halacha is to pay kfimasha gadar, and the litigant just didn't know what the halacha is, so that nevertheless, we see in general that the Dayan should go with the amount of the tviya, not with the true halachic rule. Correct? That's the interpretation of the Bach. Now, that's a pretty mind-boggling legal conclusion, I would say. Again, it's explainable in terms of the theories that we raised at the outset of Shir. We'll get a little deeper into that in a moment. But yes, the thought is that even when the Baal Din, the Tovea, is mistaken in the amount that he claims, better to go with that amount than to allow the judge to impose the true din or the higher claim on the case. Yes? Okay. Now, let me just point out. The Sma says the same thing. We'll get to the Sma in a moment. There's an exegetical issue here that these Mefarshim have to grapple with coming out of the Bach's theory and the Sma's theory. What's the exegetical issue they have to deal with in the Sugya? Dov, you want to...
Yes, the in law of the in law.
Yeah. So, what was Rava's threat? Right, Rava's threat to Runya was, oh, if you don't pay up the lesser amount that he's suing you for, then you're going to be on the hook for the kifimasha gadar, higher amount. What kind of claim is that? If meikar adin, the halacha is that the dayan is supposed to award the amount of the tviya, how could he turn around and threaten to hire more than the nitba is chayiv based on this procedural rule that you only award the amount of the tviya? Correct? Does everybody see that? That's the challenge for the theory that advocates for judicial minimalism, right? So what do they say? So the Bach has two suggestions here. Dov, what are the Bach's two suggestions?
So he suggests... Again, basically against Tos was that maybe it was really to scare him.
Yeah, so I saw Ned posted about this and then retracted it, I think. So the second answer, this is a strange answer also. The second answer, Lafchido, is that it was a lie, right? We're adopting a theory of judicial minimalism or judicial restraint, but that permits, judicial lying. Right, so the judge, Rava here, tells Runya, if you don't pay this amount, I'm going to hold you on the hook for triple this. And according to the second view in the Bach, that was a lie because halachically he wouldn't be allowed to issue an award for more than the Tovea sued for. Does everybody see that? Pretty, I think that's a very striking view. We'd have to explain why in the world is Rava allowed to lie to threaten the litigant. Scharia?
I mean, doesn't this happen like a bunch? Like, doesn't Tosos quote some examples where like Dayanim give like really exaggerated threats? And it's not really clear. I don't know, I haven't looked into those sugyas themselves, but like, you know, sometimes Dayanim do these sorts of things.
Right. I guess the question is whether in those cases when they give those threats, are they actually threats that they could back themselves up on? Right, like I'll confiscate your mansion. Would that have been okay? The second view, the second sheet of the Bach here seems to be like, no, they couldn't have done that because their hands here are tied based off the rule that you can't issue an award for more than the tviya. It's like lehavchido here is not just a, it's an empty threat. That's what's wild. That's what's strange about it, right? So yes, it seems like a cost that would come along with the robust theory of judicial restraint. So the Bach and the Sma are the strongest view about judicial restraint here, that you're really locked into the tviya of the Toveya, even if the Toveya just messed up and, you know, issued the wrong number because he didn't know the din. What do you do with the line in the Gemara that seemed to say that if you don't pay the lesser amount, I'll be mechayev for more? That was just an empty lie. That's this lehavchido amarkein. The first view of the Bach, the first answer of the Bach is a little different, but also strange. What's the first suggestion of the Bach to explain that line?
That if he's giving the dayan a hard time, then he can kind of, the whole idea of be asked for less, that you get only do that, kind of just flies out the window.
Yeah, it's like as a knas, right? So this is the funny part of the case, right? So, and Zecharia pointed this out in the discussion board yesterday, in the WhatsApp yesterday regarding the Shach. So it's Meikar Adin, you're chayav to pay Kefima Shagadar. But then Meikar Adin, that gets knocked down because the Toveya was Toveya less than that, right? So it gets knocked down to Agar Natira. But if you don't pay that, then I'm going to Knas you, Shalomin Adin, right, to pay what would have been the din, but for the lesser tviya amount submitted by the toveya. So basically, that's what the Bach here says. He says, "Im haya misarev ein lo ledayin lifsok yoser imasha tava, ela im haya misarev shelo lefayis esrevina haya konso l'shalim kol mashem magielo midina." That phrase is a stira mineu bei. How could you knas somebody to pay what they're chayev min adin? If you're chayev min adin, it's not a knas. But what he means is that I'm going to penalize you to pay what would have been the din had the toveya sued for the ikar hadin amount. The reason why I'm emphasizing this is because the Bach is very consistent here in insisting that the dayan actually is limited to the amount of the tviya. Any amount more than that is just an empty threat or an extra legal knas. That's the beauty of the position. So we have a hand from Josh and then a hand from Ned.
I guess this just depends on like what we were talking about in Shir before about whether or not like the property rights within halacha are derived from halacha or not. Because I read this differently. I read it that like fundamental like MS rights or whatever, you get the higher amount. And it's true that because he didn't toe in the right amount, we lower it. But to my mind, that fundamental amount is still there. And he is in fact saying, Magia lo Medina, like, you know, we never really changed the fundamental right there. And so the Knas is really just trying to get him the real amount that he should have gotten even now.
Yeah, but then it's difficult for me to see why it's a Knas, right? But to my mind, a Knas by definition is something that's not din. No?
Well, meaning it's not like the din as it is right now, but it's still like the true din. I don't know.
Right. I hear what you're saying, Josh. Meaning, the way Josh wants to look at it is there's the ikar hadin amount, which is kfima shagadar, and then there's an external limitation on that based off siman yad zayin. How much was the toveya suing for? Correct, Josh. And then a knas could undo Yud Zayin to get you back to the Meikar Adin Kfima Shagadar amount. That's how you're reading it, Josh. My reading is that you wouldn't call that a knas then, right? A knas sounds like a word contrary to din. So therefore, I read the Bach as saying Kfima Shagadar would have been the din. Simon Yud Zayin means now that the din is whatever the suit was filed for. And then the knas to go back to kfima shagadar is a non-din type of award, right? V'haraya, Josh, I just think, look at the second answer of the Bach where he says like lehavchido, like the dayan wouldn't even be able to do that, right? It's like such a non-accessible amount at this point. But does everybody see the machlokas between Josh and me? about how to conceptualize this? Yeah? Yes? No? Benji, yes? Thumbs up? Yeah? Okay. Great. Kobe? A little bit? Ezra? Thumbs up? I saw a thumb. Good. Yeah. Yeah, it was a little garbled there into the hyperspace behind you. But okay, that's an important debate. We'll come back to this. Ned, do you have a hand on this?
Yeah, about the second suggestion.
Yeah.
The Frido. I think the idea that, I don't know, going in line with like the Nitziv and the I think it was the Yerushalmi, right? So here, A&M at Yesh Shalom, like I think it's consistent with the general thrust of the sugya. When we're dealing with cases, you have to take truth with a grain of salt.
Yeah, right. So he's like bullying him. It's like I told you about my friend who clerked for that judge downtown, and he's like, you know, he snoozed through all the cases, like, all right, guys, you know, settle it or else you'll all be really upset with my decision type thing. And Ned, you're saying to achieve that end, that's why he could be mafchido. Yeah, great. So let me just say, I think the Bach, let's read the Sma, and then I'll summarize these views. The Sma says exactly the same thing as the Bach, in my opinion. He goes through the whole analysis, and when he comes out here, he says, you have to say that the Rama read the Gemara, that when Ravina and Runya came before Rava, they didn't tell him the history of the case. Lo gila Ravina sheyada hadin is the Sma. And therefore, we could learn from here that even when the Dayan thinks that the party is mistaken, he still is obligated to issue the award confined to the amount that the mistaken litigant asked for. Okay. Imkain shop. So that means that in this case, right? So Rava didn't know that Ravina knew the din. And nevertheless, he paskin the lesser amount. Imkain shapir nilmon misham da dayin lo yifsok yoser mehatvia. Okay, does everybody see that? And then again, like the Bach, he says the threat that Rava gave, that if you don't pay, I'm going to make you, if you don't agree, I'm going to make you pay according to the amount of kfimash gadar, that was betoras knas. And this formulation actually works better with maybe Josh's reading. He says, "De'ena rotsa letzayis ledayin lefayis lefachas ma'idetovo lahamido al kav hadin." Right, so I'm going to put you back to pay the din amount. So it's a little hard to know how that word is being used in this context. But the Sma's analysis comes out the same as the Bach. Was that everyone's impression? Skyra, you have a hand on this?
The last line in the Sma was, I thought it was the third answer, which is also very interesting.
Yeah.
So he said that by Runya refusing to pay the initial thing, then that gives Rava the license to actually make her a din, paskin the full amount. It makes it sound like it's actually just like a full new court case. Like we just like, I don't know. And just it just gives the Danim license to just paskin it fresh.
Yeah, it's like if you're not gonna accept that amount, then we could like relitigate or something. You see, the way I would think about this is going back to Ned's paradigm right at the beginning of the shir today. See, I would think about this Bach or that line in the Sma, or even the earlier parts of the Sma, almost in terms of pshara categories, which is if this is the amount that the Toveya is extending to you, then we could just settle this according to pshara, almost, right? And a Dayan is obligated to, you know, for shalom reasons, whatever it is, to minimize machloksim, to get that pshara through. Now, if that pshara is rejected by the nitba, then we could litigate according to Maker Adin. You see that? That's the way that I would think of Siman Yud Zayin even. So like almost reducing Siman Yud Zayin to Siman Yud Bey's principles or something close to it. Does that make sense to you guys as a compelling theory? Or at least in this last, so in the last line of the, so in this last line here, the point is, look, if here's a, there's a pshara on the table. A mitzvah livtsoa. So as the Yad Rama said in our sugya. So if there's mitzvah livtsoa, then accept his offer. But if you don't accept his offer, then I'm going to be poskin lo kedine. That's how I would read this last line. It's clearly very different from the Bach's approach, because the Bach's approach is to say the only way you could get back to the Mikra Din amount is through a knas. Or you can't even get back to it because it was just lahafchido amarle. See that, Zacharia? You look a little confused, so why don't you...
I'm sorry, do you mind maybe take that one more time?
Yeah. So the significance of the Bach's reading is that once the lawsuit is filed for the Agar Netira amount, there's no way to re-access or to adjudicate the claim for the Kfi Masha Gadar amount unless you go the route of a knas, right? And the Bach even wanted to say maybe it was just a lie, right? Maybe Rava couldn't even issue a knas for that amount, right? So the claim totally limits it ties the Dayanim's hand. Yes. Understood that way, it seems almost like a theory of din. Right. Now, the Me'ikar HaDin amount is lessened. If you want to go back and award higher, you need a knas or you can never access it. Okay. Do you see that, Zacharia? The Sma in this last line is saying, well, maybe there is a Me'ikar HaDin way. So he agrees with the box analysis all the way through, right? He agrees that Dayan should only issue the amount that's claimed by the Toveya. But he says if the Nitba doesn't accept that amount, you could poskin lo kedine me'ikar din. So how could you do that? Right? So you're saying, oh, it's like a new court case, something like that, Tzchari, right? Another way of thinking about it maybe is that this is almost like a mitzvah livtsoa. If there's an offer on the table for a certain lesser amount, or the tviya is for less, mitzvah livtsoa requires that you try to get the other side to accept that amount. If he refuses to accept that amount, then you have to litigate according to din. And that's, you know, the mikra din amount, as Josh said, never changed, right? The tviya doesn't change the ikra din amount. The tviya just means that there's like a mitzvah livtsoa for the lesser amount that was offered. That's how I would read this last line in the Sma. Right? So you can almost think of it as these achronim are debating whether Ein L'dayan L'chayev Yosef Masha Tava is a principle of Pshara or a principle of Din. Is that clear? Okay. Great. Romy, welcome. How was the tutoring?
It was fine.
Okay, great. That's the view of the Bach and the Sma. And I think the Bach and the Sma, I'll say, are the strongest views about the Dayan's limitation to award more than the Tviya. The Shach, once you hit the Shach, everybody jumps on board with the Shach's view, which is a much weaker view. Okay. Let me just point out, there's a whole view in the Achronim led by the Shach. What are they most upset about in the Bach and the Sma's analysis? You could see this in the Taz, for example. Let's see. Where did I put the Taz? Pesachei Tshuva. Oh, the Taz a little later. Here's the Taz. You could see they're all really hitched up about the knas suggestion, right? That which the Sma and the Bach suggest that this is derek knas, right? That zed davar she'ein ha'seichel makablo, that ma yikno sosa, ma pisho duhu ha'yasavar she'ein otzarech liten lo klum. Right, poor Runya, right? Like, why should Runya be penalized just because he's insisting that he doesn't have to pay anything? Like what wrong did Runya do such that he's not going to be penalized to pay this higher amount? And some of the other Achronim are also really worked up about this point. So let's look at the Shach's analysis. What is the Shach? What's the Shach's position on all this? So Simon Yud Zayin, Sif Katan Tesvav, Zacharia.
So I think the way Noah and I broke it down is he raised three main objections.
Yeah, well, actually, first, this summary of the Sma is helpful because the Sma himself didn't fully flesh out the theory. Here's the summary, the Shach summary of the Sma and the Bach. Just take us to this line.
Kasha, minali le Rama, the uvda the Ravina hafihadu. As in, it's just kind of like, how do you know that the story in the Gemara was actually evidence for this?
Yeah, and just to try to reinforce how strong of a legal conclusion the Sma and the Bach's reading is, means that every time you have an Amaretz who comes to Bezdin and doesn't know the din and he asks for less than he's entitled to, it's like the guy's messed over. Right? Do you see that? So it's almost like the poor guy, just because he doesn't know the din, he's going to get less than he's entitled to. Now, Ned's going to say, great. Like, why should we give him things that he doesn't want? Right, Ned? It's like if my kid, let's say I don't like that my kid should have candy, right? I think it's unhealthy. So, let's say my son asked me for M&M's and say, oh, don't take one, take two M&M's, right? Take, that'd be like an irrational thing to do, right? Everybody agree? For me to offer more than he wants, given that I don't want him to have them. So Ned will say, that's exactly the point here. But on the other hand, it's a little strange that people are losing their halachic rights simply because they don't know how to assert them. Are we in agreement on that? That's what the Shach thinks is so troubling, right? He's saying, what, every Amaretz, anybody who's Toa Bedin or is not a Baki Bedin, they're going to lose out in all these court cases. Okay, so what does he...
it brings the more like kind of direct, like philosophical, like conceptual objection and like the part I quoted in the chat.
Is that a little later on?
Od Kasha. As in the first questions are more like just evidence. He just doesn't think the Gemara Bava Basra reads the way they're suggesting it reads.
Yeah.
The second problem is this more conceptual point of just like, if someone's making Toa Bedin, you should be helping them out.
Right. Yeah, it's almost like a moral point. But let me also just, in this line here on the bottom of 27 in the Shach, he explicitly reads this, that just the, Rava is mediating as a pshara offer, right? Ravino is making a pshara offer. Okay, we don't have to get into this now. It's not important. But Rava said, this line is interesting. Rava said, Zil paise b'mayde ifayis miritzono hatov kodem she'efso kadin. Right, so the way the Shach thinks you could read the Gemara is almost like a pshara midas hanidonim. Rava said, look, there's an offer on the table. Be mefasher with him before we even talk about paskening. Right, so actually, this is parallel to Josh Brofman's reading of the sugya. Right, Josh Brofman wanted to say this is like the Riaz Shach's view that he paskin the case, but he said, "Oh, there you could do a pshara if the Bali Dinam are on board even after a psak." That was the Riaz's view, which the Shach adopted. The Shach here is saying the opposite a little bit. There's a pshara on the table, so be mafasher with him, and if only if that fails, will we go to try to paskin the case? Right, so just reverse chronological order. Okay, but that's implicit over here, right? So Zil paise v'maydefayis miratzono hatov kodem she'efso kadin, not bitoras psak, bitoras pius, bitoras pshara, and if not, then we'll talk about kviya bidin. Okay, so how does the Shach, in any event, how does the Shach read this principle? Tzacharia, go for it.
Yeah, so he reads the principle as pretty much just saying it outside, that Ramon is saying in cases of
Sma. Oh, sorry, you wanted to raise his, what's the objection that he raises conceptually to the Ramah's analysis? Read this question.
Yes. So he's saying, according to at least the Sma's and the Bach's understanding of the Ramah, so ima dayin roa shema gir lo l'toveya, al piyadein, yosi masha toveya, vatveya toa bedin o inu baku, lama lo yipsak lo l'shaim lo kol masha magia lo al piyadein, why shouldn't he paskin everything he deserves? The atu mishum shema toveya, just because he doesn't know that the Tovei doesn't know that his property is in his fellow's hands, lo yisok adayin lahafsirlo, the dayin won't help Ben Paskin to return it. And how, through what method is the nitzba gaining ownership over this property that belongs to the Tovei? If you want to argue mechila is going on, well, the Tovei doesn't know what's going on, so he wouldn't be machil.
Yeah, so he mentions the mechila possibility, And he says, well, you have to know that you're being mochel in order for mechila to be effective. We'll see that Katsos disagrees with that later on. But more than that, the Shach seems to argue that, look, Meikar Adin, the Toveah is entitled to more. And how could the Dayanim not be Mechayiv what he's entitled to Meikar Adin, right? Lama lo yistak lo l'shalim kol masha magilo al pi hadin. Right, and again, in Madayin Rosh, magilo Toveah al pi hadin, yosem masha Toveah. And Zachary, what do you think the natural response to the Shach is? Do you think there's not, maybe you don't think there's a natural response?
I mean, I'll just say, like, there's no pre-din, there's no magialo al pi din.
Yeah.
As in, he's kind of assuming that the din has reached its conclusion. It's already shallow. It's shell, right? As in, he's saying it's already, as in, the Toveah already owns this stuff. And the Beis Din's job is to make sure it ends up in the right hand.
Exactly. And I think we could push back and say, like, what the, no, like, no, Rabbi Shach. We would say, no. What you're saying is that he would have been entitled to more had he sued for more, right? So like in a world where he sued for more, yes, what's magia lo al piyadin is the full amount. But in a world where you sue for less, then what's magia lo al piyadin is actually less, right? That's the, that was my response to Josh earlier, right? So the, you know, the Shach says, oh, mechila, you might say, forget about mechila. There's a different type of halachic principle that the amount you're entitled to al pi din is constrained by the claim you insert. No? Sorry, I think that's what you were pointing on the discussion board, on the WhatsApp.
Yeah, so this is a discussion we had last year about like the, you know, the primordial din versus the kind of the din apportioning things later on.
Exactly. The rules of litigation partially determine what you're entitled to, correct? Yeah. Great. Josh is like, no. This relates exactly to that discussion. Good. So how does the Shach want to read the Psak of the Ramah? Not as strong as the Sma and the Bach. The Sma and the Bach think that even if the Dayan knows that the litigant is wrong, they should still only give him what he asks for. Zachariah, what does the Shach think?
So he concludes that the Ramah is talking about cases of Stam, and where there's a chash that where someone makes a low claim, and we're not sure. Was he making this low claim because he's being mochel, or is he making this low claim because he's being toa? And since there's a chashash that he's actually really being mochel, we don't want to pask in the higher amount. So he passed in the higher amount, and he was already mochel that amount. That's really bad. That's like a zela.
Yeah. So it turns out to be like a pariv theory of judicial restraint, not a strong theory of judicial restraint. It's like, look, misafik, dayan should have restraint. But if the dayan knows that the litigant is toa bedin, then of course he has to be mechayiv what the Shach calls, what the litigant's entitled to meikar adin. And that's where the Bach and Sma disagree with the Shach, right? In the case where the Dayan knows that the litigant was toa bedin and asked for too little, the Shach says, oh, there justice requires that you give him what he's actually entitled to. The theory of judicial minimalism only exists in the case where there's genuine suffix, right? You don't know why the guy is asking for less. Maybe there's a good reason. So then you should have restraint. But Sma and the Shach think like, no, even if you know the guy is mistaken, you should only give him what he asked for. Josh, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I just don't think it's at all obvious that if it's a suffix, we should side with the side that, oh, we have to be sure we don't give him more than he's mochel. Shouldn't we be more worried about the fact that he was so he should get what he deserves?
Yeah. She might say once the Shach is all hitzed up and all, you know, excited about doing justice and giving the Toveah his due, you know, why does he allow for a suffix case to get through like this? Right, Josh? Yeah. So yeah, I don't know if you saw, there are some achronim who actually disagree with the Shach. Anybody see the Pisrei Tshuva who swings the other way? Yeah, so let's just look there for a second. The Pisrei Tshuva quotes the Me'il Tzedaka, who raises exactly Josh's objection. I hope you guys got a feel of a little bit for like the, how the Shulchan Aruch Nosei Kelim work, right? You can see there's the Ramah who's got his own reading of Runya, and then the, you know, the Bach and the Sma try to defend it, read it one way, and then the Shach jumps on, and then, you know, the Pisrei Tshuva thinks the Shach didn't go far enough. Okay, maybe I was the only one who's excited by all this back and forth. No one else is, you know.
I thought it was interesting to see like how far Sumnus and Caleb are going to like justify the ways of Ramah to man. And like the Ramah just kind of comes in, drops half a line comment, leaves, and it's up to the Achronim to just hash out like every possible permutation of how to read like three lines of this Gemara.
Yeah.
That no one had like looked at before.
That's right. That's right. You'll see how the Achronim write so much more than the Rishonim, right? The Sma and the Shach, like they're, you know, they kind of.
Well, notably, I think the Taz was actually the only Achron who was like totally comfortable just saying, yeah, of course the Ramah's just wrong, like epistemically. He agrees, like, Lamaskana, halachically, like he says, like, yeah, it's a reasonable Svara, but you have no sources for it.
Right.
Everyone else was like, oh, this is really what the Ramah meant. What I think is compelling.
Taz was happy to jettison it.
Yeah.
Also, pretty amazing how rich our three lines in the Gemara are with this little Runya story. Right. You see here, it generates all this discussion in Simanyud Zayin. Yeah. So, what does the Mil Tzedakah say here, quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva and Simanyud Zayin? So, B'tshuvas Mil Tzedakah Hikshel Ashach B'zeh. And what does he say? Anybody? So let's see this line. Anybody want to read this? Let's see. Any hands to read this Pesachei Tshuva? Romy, there you go.
Ulam b'tshuvat mil tzedaka sof simin and gimel, yeah.
If it was Simon and Hay, it would be Mochel you also.
What? Oh.
If it was Simon and Hay, it would be okay also.
Umasik with Din the Dafka in Barsha Yadalitvo, sorry. Masik with Din the Dafka in Barsha Yadalitvo Yoter, Kiahidra Ravina Shimitkila Tava called Me Gidra of Hule, Bezehu Darmin and Demashal Tava Yoter have a good Mechil Mfureshet. Lachain Eno Lifsok Yoter.
Right, so hold on for a second. So he's saying the only time,
meaning he's taking out the suffix. He's right. Meaning, the only time that they're not allowed to help him is if they know that he knew the din and still, you know, made a lower claim. In which case, we assume there was mechila.
Exactly. So he's reading the Gemara that Rava knew what.
Meaning Rava knew the halacha. Rava knew that Ravina knew the halacha.
Exactly. Right, so the exact opposite of the Sma and the Bach, right? See, the Gemara doesn't give us all the facts, and the facts really matter here. Like, what knowledge did Rava have in this case? The Mil Tzedakah says Rava had full knowledge, and therefore he says what?
Rava full knowledge, and therefore he couldn't.
Read this line about Kol Shaar.
All right, about Kol Shaar, Mistavgi Machalo Hamotar Ota Bedin Ha'Vada Dirushayim Abeizin Lomar Lo Sha'al Pi Hadin Magil Yoter. Meaning if it's a suffix, or if you know that he was Tava, but especially if it was a suffix, then they would be able to, you know, tell him that, meaning basically help him out.
Exactly. Josh, that's what you wanted to say once you have the Shach's objection, right? The Shach should have said, wait, in a suffix case, the Bezin should help out, or at least it's permissible for them to help out the party that's possibly mistaken, right? So they should help the Tovea out. Yeah. Great. Do you see that, guys? The Mil Tzedakah swings all the way in the other way. And then he also actually throws out this interesting suggestion. This is pretty. V'hanachon shabez and yomrulo. They should say, oh, you know, Mr. By the way, you're asking for too little. Was that your intent? You know, they should try to clarify with the Tovea, like, why did you sue for less than you're entitled to? And they say, oh, if he's an honest guy and he was mochel, then he'll just tell the Bezin that he's mochel. Right, so like it doesn't hurt to just clarify. That's the Mil Tzedakah's view. But let's go back to the Shach. He said it depends on if you're Mesupak. Some later Achronim, specifically the Tumim, quoted in the Pesachei Tshuva, but let's look at the Tumim inside for one second. The Tumim in Simin Yedayin Sif Ches says what? He also cites the Shach's discussion. And what does he have as a helpful distinction to determine whether the court should step in and issue an award for more than the nitba, more than the Tovea sued for? Anybody get a chance to see this Tumim in the Pesachei Tshuva? Josh Brofman.
Yeah, you got to see, you know, how much education he's got. Did he graduate Yale or is he a farmer in Alabama?
Right. You got to see how well educated the guy is. So he says, so if the guy's a Talmud Chacham and he sues for less, then there's a chazaka that he is mochel. Right. So in that case, if the Dayanim don't know, the Dayanim should just say, issue the award kifi mashatava. But for an Amah Aretz, maybe there's a presumption that he's mistaken in din, and therefore the Dayanim should be machayev more than he sued for. Right? Which I think is a very sensible social distinction to flesh out the Shach's position. Correct? Because the Shach saying it's got to be that there's genuine suffix, and the Tumim saying, well, that's reasonable. He's saying that there's genuine suffix maybe when there's a Talmud Chacham, but for an Amaretz, you could just assume that he was mistaken in din. Make sense? Romy, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, this isn't like such a big thing, but it seems a little weird. Like, it seems like the kind of thing like Rav Zalman Chemi wouldn't like. It just makes things like really complicated. But like, who's a Talmud Chacham and who's an Amaretz? And then that's like, is an level of.
You got to litigate. You know, is the guy a Talmud Chacham or is an Amaretz or not?
Like, it's just interesting because it's not about like based in like the nature of based in and the role of based in. It's just about like the person, what we can assume, like an umdana of the person, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, or how much of a suffix is there that whether of his being mochel or him being toa bedin? Yeah. Sahari, do you have a hand on this?
Yeah, this relates to this, but it's mostly between the Shach and the Pesachei Tshuva. Is there a difference between the Dayanim just kind of going gung-ho and saying, okay, I know you're Toveya the lower, but we're just going to pask in the higher amount, right? That's like one scenario versus like, it seems the Pesachei Tshuva is talking about something else, where it's just the Dayanim informing. It's like, by the way, you do have another Tefiyah available, but they're not just kind of like jumping in and taking the action. Like they're kind of giving the Toveya the choice.
And this part you're saying?
So to appear, it's like, is there a difference between like educating a Toveya versus just kind of passing for the Toveya what we think is better for him? Like,
yeah, that's interesting. Like
a distinction.
Right. V'hanochan shebezen yomrulo, she'im yitchila kiven limchol, mosra regezel biyada likach yoser, v'day baza. Is that the idea that you're getting at?
Yeah, I mean, or the last line of the previous paragraph there. They were shot and based in Lomar Lo Sha'al Piyaden Magielo Yoser. They're just informing him. They're not, it's not, according to the Shach, it might be much more of a Dayanim.
Oh, I see that. That's nice. I mean, you're saying this Miltstaka point.
It's not necessarily a stira.
Yeah, like you still, like, so it's still judicially, there's still judicial minimalism in that you're prodding the Toveya to tease out his position. Is that right, Zacharia?
Yeah,
you're saying, oh, by the way, you know, you might be entitled to more, as opposed to saying, you know, let's instead of coaxing the Toveya to say it, you just say, well, our analysis of the case is that you're chayav more, so you're entitled to more. Yeah, good point, Zacharia. Think about that for a second. You know, maybe that's what Ravina was doing in the case. You know, v'ilav do'ino chadina. You know, he's trying to say, you know, there's also a higher amount that might be relevant here. We're kind of trying to hint at, you know, maybe trying to get Ravo trying to get Ravina to sue for more, maybe. Yeah. Has somebody else had a hand on this? Romy?
Yeah, and just what do you make of the word Rishayim there? Like that it seems like very, it's not exactly what we were saying, like you were saying Josh was saying, because that's would say like they actually have
right, to Chayavim or
right.
Yeah. I thought the Rishayim was a very interesting word also. Like it licenses them, but it's not automatic. Right. Yeah, I thought that was right.
It makes much less sense than either saying you have to or you can't, unless the idea is that in the case of a suffix, we're going to say like you can assess how much of a suffix or something like that.
Yeah, that works well. It works very well with Zacharia's reading. You know that it's Rashayin Abezin Lomar Lahem to try to prod this out and see where it goes.
Right.
Right. I think that actually works well with Zacharia. Yeah, Zacharia, you agree with that?
Yeah, I think
Rishayim
Diak is good here.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to make just one other point in this discussion. The Shach, and then we're going to look at the Ktos, and that'll be it for today. So the Shach cites the Ir Shushan, let's pull it up, who had a different theory for why the why the Dayanim shouldn't get involved. Thought this is pretty interesting. So it was definitely a theory of you know, judicial minimalism or judicial restraint. And it was almost a theory for why this Psak of the Rama should make sense. Right? So what was the Ir Shushan's view? Here's the Vitaima. He explains the Psak. This is the Ir Shushan explaining the Rama's Psak. So we saw, you know, these theories of we had three suggestions. One is Pshara, one is just judicial restraint, one is Mechila. Here I think he gives us, it's clearly not about Pshara. For the Ir Shushan, it's a theory of judicial restraint. Why and what's the underlying reason for judicial restraint? So what does he say? Anybody get a chance to see this Ir Shushan? Romy?
You want me to read it or say it?
What do you want to do?
I don't mind. I just didn't know which one you want.
It's you know, I'm a minimalist. I'm exercising restraint here, Romy. So what do you prefer?
I'll read it, I guess. I don't know.
Okay, great.
The time of the Shema Tovea Kar Hitzdik Adin Ba'atzmo, Yodea Pichashbono Shinu Chayev Lo Yoter. I mean, the guy already figured it out himself and determined, like, I only should get this amount. Afal Pi Shayde Tanosav Nitgal Shinu Chayev Lo Yoter, Inro Telegal O Shema Minachelo. I don't know what that word means. What does that word
mean? Minache is to discount or deduct.
Okay. O Shema Minachelo Mashachayev Lo Makum Acher.
So what's going on there?
I read that as like he already settled into basically what he thought he was going to get, and there would be something wrong about basically if he's already content. It's wrong to take from the other party, take more than this guy has already.
That's a Pshara theory. The way
right,
you're,
I read it as a Pshara thing. It sounds like you don't want to read it that way.
Yeah, I don't want to read it that way. I think let's focus on this example. Shema menachalo mashachaylo makom acher. So that's like, let's say I'm suing Zacharia for $1,000, right? But it happens to be that I owe Zacharia $100 from some other thing. So I only sue him for $900. And the reason why I'm suing him for $900 is because I know that I owe Zacharia $100 separately. But now we come to Bezin and I'm suing for $900. And, the Dayanim say, why are you suing for $900? This is a claim for $1,000. And then I'm going to be so emboldened, you know, everyone in the courtroom says, yeah, chutzpah, Zacharia owes him $1,000. I'm going to be so emboldened by that, I'm going to be motivated to sue for more than I'm entitled to, right? So I'm going to sue $1,000, even though I really owe Zacharia $100 separately. Does everybody see that? It's a very fascinating way of thinking about things. Why it's so this is another case. So I think this is an argument for judicial restraint. And what's fascinating about it is that it's like, forget about the case that's before you. Right? We know that there are so many types of disputes between people and their financial dealings are complex and interrelated, right? So maybe this lawsuit is just one part of their financial relationship. And if the Dayanim are going to start getting involved, then it actually creates a greater injustice. Because maybe the amount that he's suing for already factors in, it offsets claims from their pre-existing or other parts of their financial relationship. Does that make sense, guys? It's pretty, some conservative theorists think this way, that, you know, courts shouldn't get too involved in policy because anytime you tinker with like some policy, it could have all these bad effects that you didn't consider. Right? It's going to mess things up that these judges couldn't have figured out downstream. And Ir Shushan is saying, like, look, when you have a dispute between the parties, we know that there are a billion disputes that don't go to Beis Din. And this dispute is just one aspect of people's lives. So we could assume that the amount put in for this dispute reconciles the accounting from other aspects of their financial relationship. Thoughts on this, or anybody like this idea? I like this. I think it's a pretty interesting idea. A little speculative, but Romy, that's different from what you were saying, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what exactly. I mean, I do. To me, you have to figure out the other parts of the sentence, which I guess you could say are all versions of this. Like, he's mochel. I mean, I don't know. Like, you say that his mechila is also like, you know, don't get involved with why he's doing this. He's just doing it for a different reason, and therefore, just, you know, I don't know. Like, all the additional parts of the sentence suggest to me that it is a pshara thing. And I'm also not so compelled, I'll be honest, by the idea that, like, the court should be in the same way the court shouldn't be interested in what they're doing outside. It also shouldn't account for maybe worrying that maybe there he's
Right. So you're saying it's a theory of like judicial, like the judges should only deal with what's before them because they're assuming that there's stuff going on that's not before them.
Right.
Yeah. There's a little irony baked in there. Yeah. Anybody have thoughts on this? Josh, do you like it?
I'm not sure I understand the problem. Like, he's going to sue for $1,000 now. Okay. But if he knows he only gets $900, if he refuses to give the $100, then the other guy comes and sues him for $100. I don't really see the problem.
Ah, yeah. But then maybe you're bringing more litigation. Right. So maybe
I don't know. It just seems ridiculous. If he's suing for $900, he's not going to be like, oh, you're right, I should try to get $1,000. And like, I don't know.
You don't think this is a genuine concern? Right, and you're saying worse comes to worse, so then they make the claim for the offsetting in Besdin. Yeah, so that's an interesting point. Anybody else have a thought on this? Eitan, you have a thought on this? Sounds good to you? Benji, you have a thought on this? It's good, okay. Ned? Dove, this is good? Great. So let's then look at Ktsos, the last sheet I wanted to review today. The Ktsos is different from everybody else. Let's see. Yeah, the Ktsos is different from everybody else in this sugya. What's his main way of explaining this? It really just taps into a line that the Shach threw away very quickly. Why does the Ktsos think that the Rama is right in Siman Yud Zayin, or at least that he's the Rivash in the Tshuva makes sense? Anybody get a chance to see this Ktsos? Anybody get a chance to see it? Ah, I'm so far ahead of everyone. So the Ktsos just says that the Rivash is Lashitaso, that Mechila Bitaos is Shmei Mechila. So maybe in some cases, even a mistaken Mechila is a valid Mechila. He thinks that's the Rivash's position, that Mechila Bitaos have a Mechila. And maybe the Ramaz Psak is grounded in that type of a theory also. So yes, even if a litigant shows up and he by mistake was Mochel, by thinking that he's entitled to less than he's entitled to Maker Adin, that's still a binding and valid Mechila. Somebody see that? So it's a, you know, the Shach said, oh, you have to know what your Mochel in order for that to be a binding Mechila. And the Ktsos says, no, some poskim in some cases think that even if you're Toa Bedin, Mikol Makom Mechila B'Toas Hava Mechila, Kivan Duhu Mochel Midaito. Since like you asked for less, even though it's a mistake, the Ktsos and Siman Yud Zayin Sifkat and Gimel thinks that could be binding. So that's just like a clear mechila way of approaching our sugya. It's not about pshara. It's not about judicial restraint. It's a hilchos kinyan, hilchos mechira type of principle. All right. So those are the main views of the poskim and how to interpret the Ramaz Pesach and Yud Zayin. Let me just briefly explain what the agenda is for tomorrow. So we're just going to look at the second case on Daf Hey Amid Aleph. So it's a Dina de Bar Metzra case. Everyone familiar with Dina de Bar Metzra? Dina de Bar Metzra is a right that you have to have the right of first refusal in buying the property adjoining your property. Is that halacha familiar to you guys? Okay, so the question here in our case is that Ravina was trying to assert his right of Dina de Bar Metzra. But the Dayan in this case, or Safra Bredrav Yuva, said that for whatever reason, Runya's purchase overrides Ravina's Dina de Bar Metzra right. Correct? Seemingly based in Vatsisa Yashar Batov. That's the big picture issue. So I want to know, I want to keep our eyes open for the following. Number one, is this psak grounded in din, or is it grounded in lifnim mishuras hadin? I think there's a machlokas rishonim here about how to understand Rav Safra's psak. Okay. Number two, if it's grounded in lifnim mishuras hadin, was it a coercive psak? Was this an enforceable psak that Rav Safra was imposing on Ravina? Or was it advice, b'toras lifnim mishuras hadin, not a psak that Ravina is bound by? Does everybody see that issue? So two issues. Those are the two main issues. Number three, the third issue. So what we're going to look at, we'll look at the Mefart, the Rishonim in our case. But then there are a few famous Gemaras that are important for establishing that question of whether we could be kofa on lifnim mishuras hadin. Specifically, this Gemara in Bava Metzia, Pei Gimel. Ned actually posted this on the WhatsApp discussion a while back. So we're going to look at that Gemara in Pei Gimel. There's a Gemara in Bava Metzia, Chaf Dalid, that you should look at also about whether you could be kofa on lifnim mishuras hadin. Famous Mordechai, Rishon Zion, the Rush on Bava Metzia, Bei Zion. Those are the main Rishonim. And then you get 2 days in Shulchan Aruch Siman Yud Beis, which is actually the Siman on Pshara, about whether you could be kofa lifnim mishuras hadin. That's the 2 days down here. So I want us to think about what's the relationship. So what is this question about? Whether you could be kofa on lifnim mishuras hadin. And does it relate to Pshara at all? Like, why is it here in Siman Yud Beis? Remember, we also saw some Rishonim characterizing Pshara as lifnim mishuras hadin. And we saw Rashi al Torah, we saw the Ramban al Torah say this, it's implicit in the Gemara Bava Metzia about a Hamidu Dineim al Din Torah. So I want us to think about that question a little bit. And then finally, there's a bit of a just a background issue, which is does this question in our sugya about whether it's lifnim mishuras hadin or mikra hadin, that's going to depend on how Dina de Bar Metzra works. So there's a little bit of a background issue here about the mechanics of Dina de Bar Metzra that will determine whether our sugya is lifnim mishuras hadin or mikra hadin. Okay, does that sound like a game plan? So we're going to do this in one day. So I would just say you have to triage in going through the Makoros because it's a short Seder tomorrow. Some of you guys have tonight, some a few hours tonight to devote to the Makoros. But I would say the most important thing that you could take away from the sugya in the big picture is the sugyas that bear on whether we're kofa on lifnim mishuras hadin. And that's like the big shas sugya that's here. So focus on those sugyas. But then, it's good to see the Rishonim in our sugya and the Dina de Bar Metzra application. Okay, that's the plan for tomorrow. Shkayach, guys, super excited that we're now on schedule to be at Vav Amud Beis for, after Thanksgiving. Great. Any other comments before we adjourn? No? Everyone's great. All right. Shkayach, guys. See you tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Lifnim mishuras hadin. Take care.
Thanks.